to the drow's second blade, coming in low, aimed for the woman's leading knee. Ellery chopped down with her shield, spun a tight circuit behind it, and extended as she came around. Jarlaxle threw back his hips, then started in yet again behind the flashing axe. He stopped and flung himself out to the side as Ellery cut short her swing and came ahead in a rush, her powerful axe at the ready. She stayed right with him, step for step. An angled sword moved aside her powerful chop. Her shield tapped down on one sword, driving it low, came up to take the second high, then low again, then... Jarlaxle was too quick with his second blade, feigning high once more, but thrusting it down low instead. But Ellery was quick as well, and the shield tapped down appropriately. On came the woman with a growl, and Jarlaxle had to step back fast and spin out to the side. He brought both his swords in one desperate parry and accepted the shield bash against his arm, glad that the momentum of it allowed him to put some distance between himself and the surprisingly skilled woman. "If I win again, will I find your bed?" he teased. Ellery didn't crack a grin.
"Those days are long past us."
"They don't have to be." Ellery's response came in the form of another sudden charge and a flurry of blows that had Jarlaxle furiously defending and backing, stride after stride. Entreri rushed out past Athrogate.
"I have the point," he explained. "Follow with caution but with speed."
He sprinted down the corridor, pushing through the door and into the room where Mariabrone lay still, his sword held in both hands over his chest, its blade running down below his waist. Entreri shook his head and dismissed the tragic sight. He went across the room to the other door, did a cursory check for traps when he saw that it had not recently been opened, and pushed through to find another curving, descending tunnel. He sprinted down and carefully set the first torches burning by tapping the pressure plate. Then he turned and rushed back to the door, scrambling up beside it to the top of the jamb. Using just that tiny lip and the ceiling above him, the assassin pressed himself into place. A few moments later, Athrogate moved out under him, followed closely by Olger Khan and Arrayan, with Canthan moving last. They passed without noticing the assassin, and before they had even disappeared around the tunnel bend, Entreri hooked his fingers on the lip of the door jamb and swung down, launching himself and landing lightly back in the room with Mariabrone. He hit the ground running and ran back up the corridor. Her movements were very much in line with the fighting style and skill level she had shown to him in their sparring match those days before at the Vossen Gate. Ellery was no novice to battle and had practiced extensively in single combat techniques. Her efforts tested Jarlaxle at every turn. He had beaten her then, however, and he knew he could beat her again. She had to know that, too, as Canthan, who had sent her, had to understand, unless... They were the citadel of assassins, after all. Ellery continued the flow of the fight, working her axe with quick chops and cuts, generally playing out more and more to Jarlaxle's right. She followed almost every swing with a sudden popping thrust of her shield arm, leaving no openings for the drow's swords, and also balancing herself and her turns to keep her feet properly aligned to propel her side to side or forward and back as required. She was good, but not good enough, and they both knew it. It almost slipped past the observant drow that Ellery had crossed her feet, so smooth was the transition. Even noting that, Jarlaxle was taken aback at how efficiently and quickly the woman executed a sudden spin, so that as she came forward, her axe chopping hard, she was aiming back at the drow's left. And he couldn't stop it. Jarlaxle's eyes widened, and he even smiled at the kill swing, that one movement assassins often employed, that extra level of fighting beyond anything any opponent could reasonably expect to see. Jarlaxle had expected something of that nature, of course, but still, as he saw it unfolding before him, he feared, he knew, that he could not stop it. Ellery roared and chopped hard at the drow's shoulder. Jarlaxle grimaced and threw his swords across in an effort to at least partially defeat the blow, and threw himself aside in a desperate effort to get out of the way. But Ellery's roar became a scream, and in mid-swing her axe wobbled, its angle pulling aside, her arm falling limp, as Karin's claw slammed hard atop her shoulder.
Her fine, silvery breastplate rattled and loosened as the shoulder cord tore apart under the force of Entreri's blow. She staggered and turned, trying to come around and get her shield up to fend off the assassin. Entreri's other hand was under her shield, however, and his dagger easily found the seam in her breastplate and slid in between the woman's ribs into the left side of her chest. Ellery froze, helpless and on the precipice of disaster. Entreri didn't finish the movement but held her there, his dagger in place. Ellery glared at him, and he called upon the life-drawing powers of the weapon for just an instant, letting her know the complete doom that awaited her. She didn't persist. She was beaten, and she showed it. Her weapon arm hung limp, and she didn't try to stop the axe as it slid from her grip and clanged against the floor. "An interesting turn of events," Jarlaxle remarked. "But Canthan would move against us so quickly."
"And that a relative of the King of Damara would be an instrument for an assassin's guild," Entreri added.
"You know nothing,"
Ellery growled at him, or started to, for he gave the slightest of twists on his dagger and brought the woman up to her tiptoes. The commander sucked in her breath against the wave of pain.
"When I ask you to answer, you answer," Entreri instructed.
"I told you that Canthan was fooled," Jarlaxle said to her. "He believes that killing Arrayan will defeat the tower." He turned to Entreri. "She is the Herminical of this castle, so Canthan believes. But I do not agree." Entreri's eyes widened. "This is beyond Arrayan," Jarlaxle explained. "Perhaps she began the process, but something greater than she has intervened."
"You know nothing,"
Ellery said through her gritted teeth. "I know that you, the lawful representative of King Gareth in this quest, were about to kill me, though I have done nothing against the crown and risked everything for the realm's sake," Jarlaxle pointed out.
"So you say."
"And so you deny, without proof, because Canthan would be rid of Jarlaxle." "Would be rid of us," the drow added. "But he might claim whatever secrets and power Zheng Yi has left in this place and in that book. You are a pawn, and a rather stupid one, Lady Ellery. You disappoint me."
"Then be done with me," she said.
Jarlaxle looked to Entreri and saw that his friend was hardly paying attention. He yanked free the knife and darted toward the tunnel exit, and before he realized he had foolishly left alone. Her magical shield absorbed much of the blow, but still Canthan's lightning blast sent Arrayan flying back against the wall.
"It will hurt less if you drop your wards and accept the inevitability," the wizard remarked.
To the side, Olgercon once again tried to get at Canthan, and again Athrogate was there to block his way.
"She is the foundation of the castle,"
Canthan said to the large and furious half-orc.
"When she falls, so falls this Zhengian beast."
Olgercon growled and charged, or tried to, but Athrogate kicked his ankles out from under him, sending him face down to the floor.
"Ye let it be," the dwarf warned. "Ain't no choices here."
Olgercon sprang up and swung his club wildly at the dwarf.
"Well, all right, then,"
the dwarf said, easily ducking the lumbering blow.
"You're making your choices you ain't got to make."
"Be done with a stubborn oaf,"
Canthan instructed, and he calmly launched a series of stinging, glowing missiles Arrayan's way. Again, the half-orc wizard had enacted enough wards to defeat the majority of the assault, but Canthan's continuing barrage had her backing away, helpless to counter. For Olgercon, disaster was even quicker in coming. The half-orc was a fine and accomplished warrior by Palaszczuk standards, but against Athrogate he was naught but a lumbering novice, and in his weakened state not even a promising one. He swung again and was blocked, then he tried an awkward sidelong swipe. Athrogate went below the swinging club, both his morning stars spinning. The dwarf's weapons came in hard, almost simultaneously, against the outsides of Olgercon's knees.
Before the half-orc's legs could even buckle, Athrogate leaped forward and smashed his forehead into the half-orc's groin. As Uldrakan doubled over, Athrogate sent one morning star up so that the chain wrapped around the half-orc's neck, the heavy ball smacking him in the face. With a twist and a sudden and brutal jerk, one that snapped bone, Athrogate flipped Uldrakan into a sideways somersault that left him groaning and helpless on the floor.
"Uldrakan!"
Arrayan cried, and she too staggered and went down to her knees. Canthan watched it all with great amusement.
"They are somehow bound," he mused aloud. "Physically so. Perhaps the castle has a king as well as a queen."
"The human is coming!"
Athrogate called, looking past Canthan to the corridor. Enough musing, the wizard realized, and he took the moment of Arrayan's weakness to fire off another spell, a magical, acid-filled dart. It punctured her defensive sphere and slammed into her stomach, sending her sitting back against the wall. She cried out from the pain and tried to clutch at the tiny projectile with trembling hands.
"Kill him when he enters," Canthan instructed the dwarf.
The wizard ran out of the room along one of the side corridors just as Entreri burst in. Entreri looked at Athrogate, at Uldrakan, and at Arrayan, then back at the dwarf, who approached steadily, morning stars swinging easily. Athrogate offered a shrug.
"Guess it's the way it's got to be,"
the dwarf said, almost apologetically. Ellery held her hands out to her sides, not knowing what she was supposed to do.
"Well, gather up your weapon and let us be off," Jarl Axel said to her.
She stared at him for a few moments, then bent to retrieve the axe, eyeing Jarl Axel all the while as if she expected him to attack.
"Oh, pick it up," the drow said.
Still, Ellery paused.
"We've no time for this," said Jarl Axel. "I'll call our little battle here a misunderstanding, as I'm confident that you see it the same way now. Besides, I know your trick now, and a fine move it is, and will kill you if you come against me again."
He paused and gave her a lewd look. "Perhaps I will extract a little payment from you later on. But for now, let us just be done with this castle and the infernal Zhengyi." Ellery picked up the axe. Jarl Axel turned and started away after Entreri. The woman had no idea what to do or what to believe. Her emotions swirled as her thoughts swirled, and she felt very strange. She took a step toward Jarl Axel, just wanting to be done with it all and get back to Damara. The floor leaped up and swallowed her. Jarl Axel turned sharply, swords at the ready, when he heard the thump behind him. He saw at once that those weapons wouldn't be needed. He moved quickly to Ellery and tried to stir her. He put his face close to her mouth to try to detect her breath, and he inspected the small wound Entreri had inflicted.
"So, the dagger got to your heart after all," Jarl Axel said with a great sigh.
Entreri wasn't certain if Athrogate was incredibly good, or if it was just that the dwarf's unorthodox style and weaponry. He had never even heard of someone wielding two morning stars simultaneously, had him moving in ways awkward and uncomfortable. Whatever the reason, Entreri understood that he was in trouble. Glancing at Arrayan, he realized that her situation was even more desperate. Somehow that bothered him as much, if not more. He growled past the unnerving thought and created a series of ash walls to try to deter the stubborn and ferocious dwarf. Of course, Athrogate just plowed through each ash wall successively, roaring and swinging so forcefully that Entreri dared not get too close. He tried to take the dwarf's measure. He tried to find a hole in the little beast's defenses. But Athrogate was too compact, his weapon movements too coordinated. Given the dwarf's strength and the strange enchantments of his morning stars, Entreri simply couldn't risk trading a blow for a blow, even with his own mighty weapons. Nor could he block, for he rightly feared that Athrogate might tangle one of his weapons in the Morning Star chain and tear it free of his grasp. Or even worse, might that rusting sludge that coated the dwarf's left-hand weapon ruin Karin's claw's fine blade? Entreri used his speed, darting this way and that, feigning a strike and backing away almost immediately.
He was not trying to score a hit at that point, though he would have made a stab if an opening presented itself. Instead, Intreri moved to put the dwarf into a different rhythm. He kept Athrogate's feet moving sidelong or had him turning quickly, both movements that the straightforward fighter found more atypical. But that would take a long, long time, Intreri knew, and with another glance at Arrayan, he understood that it was time she didn't have to spare. With that uncomfortable thought in mind, he went in suddenly, reversing his dodging momentum in an attempt to score a quick kill. But a sweeping morning star turned Karin's claw harmlessly aside, and the second sent Intreri diving desperately into a sidelong roll. Athrogate pursued, weapons spinning, and Intreri barely got ahead of him and avoided a skull-crushing encounter.
"Patience! Patience!" the dwarf teased.
Intreri realized that Athrogate knew exactly his strategy, had probably seen the same technique used by every skilled opponent he'd ever faced. The assassin had to rethink. He needed some space and time. He came forward in a sudden burst again, but even as Athrogate howled with excitement, Intreri was gone, sprinting out across the room. Athrogate paused and looked at him with open curiosity.
"You running, or thinking to hit me from afar?" he asked. "If you're running, ye dolt, then be gone like a colt. Be knowing in your mind that I'm not far behind. Wahaha!"
"While I find your ugliness repellent, dwarf, do not even think I would flee from the likes of you."
Athrogate howled with laughter again, and he charged, or he started to, for as he began to close the ground between himself and Intreri, an elongated disc floated in from the side, stretching and widening, and settled on the floor between them. Athrogate, unable to stop his momentum, tumbled headlong into the extra-dimensional hole. He howled, he cursed, he landed hard 10 feet down. Then he cursed some more, and in rhymes. Intreri glanced at the tunnel entrance, where Jarlaxle stood leaning. The drow offered a shrug and remarked, "Bear trap." Intreri didn't respond. He leaped across the room to Arrayan and quickly tore the magical dart from her stomach. He stared at the vicious missile, watching with mounting anger as its tip continued to pump forth acid. A glance back at Arrayan told him that he had arrived in time, that the wound wasn't mortal, but he could not deny the truth of it when he looked into Arrayan's fair face. She was dying, with literally 1 foot in the nether realm. Desperation tugged at Intreri. He saw not Arrayan, but Dwava lying before him. He shook the woman and yelled for her to come back. Hardly thinking of the movement, he found himself hugging her. Then he pulled her back to arm's length and called to her over and over again. Lying on the floor to the side, the dying Olgercon saw the fleeting health of Arrayan and understood clearly that much of his dear companion's current grief was being caused by her magical binding with him, as the rings had forced Olgercon to share Arrayan's burden. So they had begun to work the other way. Olgercon knew his wounds to be mortal, knew that he was on the very edge of death, and he was taking Arrayan with him. With all the strength he could muster, the half-orc pulled the ring from his finger and flicked it far to the side. His world went black. At the same time, Arrayan opened her eyes. Intreri fell back from her in surprise. She still looked terrible, weaker than anyone he had ever seen before, more, he could only describe it as thin and drained of her life energy, frail than any human being could be, much more so than she had been before the fight. But she still had life, and consciousness, and, so the assassin learned, rage.
"No!"
the woman cried.
"Olgercon, no!"
The tone of her voice showed that she was scolding the half-orc, not denying his wound. That, combined with her sudden return from the grave, had the assassin scratching his head. Intreri looked again to Jarlaxle, who studied the pair intently but seemingly with just as much curiosity. Arrayan, so weak and drained and sorely wounded, dragged herself past Intreri to her half-orc companion.
"You took off the ring,"
she said, cradling his face in her hands.
"Put it back! Olgercon, put it back!"
He didn't, couldn't answer. You think to save me, Aran wailed. But don't you know? I cannot be saved to watch you die. Ulchakon, come back to me. You must. You are all I love, all that I have ever loved. It's you, Ulchakon. It was always you. Please come back to me.
Her voice grew weaker. Her shoulders quivered with sobs, and she held on dearly to her friend.
The ring? Jarlaxle asked.
Arrayan didn't answer, but the drow was figuring it out anyway. He thought of all the times the two had seemed to share their pain and their weariness.
So the castle does have a king, Jarlaxle remarked to Intrary.
But the assassin was hardly listening. He stood staring at the couple, chuckling at himself, and all of his foolish fantasies about his future beside Arrayan. Without a word of explanation, Artemis Intrary ran out of the room. Chapter 20. Just Because. Though he was confident that his job was done regarding Arrayan and Ulchakon, and that Athrogate would dispatch the assassin, Canthan glanced back many times as he ran down the descending corridor. Though his gaze turned to what lay behind him, his thoughts were on the future, for he knew that there was a great prize to be found in the pages of the Witch King's book. His perusal of the tome had shown him possibilities beyond his imagination. Somehow, within that book, loomed the secret that would grant him ownership of the castle without it taking his life force as it had Arrayan's. He was certain of that. Zheng Yi had designed it so. The book would trap the unwitting and use that soul to build the castle. But that was only half the enchantment. Once constructed, the fortress was there for the taking, for one wise enough and strong enough to seize it. Canvin could do that, and certainly Nellict, among the greatest of wizards in the Bloodstone Lands, could too. Had the Citadel of Assassins just found a new home, one from which they might openly challenge King Gareth's claim of dominion?
Ah, the possibilities, Canvin muttered as he approached the next door.
The castle was either dormant or soon to be, he believed, or at least it was beyond regeneration, given the fall of its life sources. Still, the wizard remained at the ready. He threw a spell of opening that swung the door in long before he physically entered the room. In the large chamber beyond, he saw movement, and he didn't even wait to discern the type of creature before he began his spell casting. A gnoll mummy came to the threshold. It served as the first target, the initial strike point. A bolt of lightning arced onto its head, then shot away to the next target and on again. It diminished with each successive strike, but jumped about several times. That first mummy smoked and unwrapped into a pile of smoldering rags, and Canthan was fast to the point, next spell ready. A quick survey of the large room showed him the course of his first strike, the chain bouncing across five targets, mummies all. The healthiest remaining creature had been the last hit, so Canthan reversed his line and made that one the first. In the instant it took the second lightning chain to leap across the remaining mummies, all four went down, reduced to smoking husks. Canthan rushed in and braziers flared to life. The wizard looked upward at the ceiling 10 feet above and saw the telltale egg shapes of the guardian daemons nestled above each of the four braziers in the room, grinning. Canthan filled the upper 2 feet of the room, wall to wall, with strands of sticky webbing. It was a precaution only, he believed, for the castle had to be dead. The already animated monsters, like the mummies, might remain, so he thought, but with Arrayan gone, no others should animate. The wizard paused to catch his breath and consider the situation. He hoped Ellery was done with the troublesome drow, and Athrogate with the equally troublesome assassin. Mariabrone's death was good fortune for the Citadel. The troublesome but loyal ranger would have most assuredly handed Zheng Yi's great gift over to King Gareth and the other fools who ruled Damara. Canthan knew he still had to approach things with great care, though. He hoped his guess about the qualities of the castle was correct, for his task of truly deciphering the secrets of the book would be much more difficult if he had to spend half his time destroying monsters. The wizard had to quickly gather Athrogate and Ellery back to his side and take some rest.
He had nearly exhausted his magical spells for the day, and even though he believed the battle to be won, Canthan didn't like feeling vulnerable. His wizardry was his armor and his sword. Without his spells, he was just a clever but rather feeble man. He didn't appreciate the view then, when a solitary man stalked with great determination into the chamber. Far from being dead, as Canthan had presumed, the outer walls of the great structure teemed with life. Gargoyles, regenerated from their previous night's battle on the hill, flew off with the sunset, speeding across the few miles to the walls of Palaszczuk. There the defenses had been set, and there the desperate battle began. But walls proved little impediment to the winged creatures, and they swarmed the city in search of easy targets. In her room, Callahay heard the commotion beginning on the streets, the cries of alarm and the sounds of battle joined. She looked over at Davis Aang, his eyes wide, his breathing heavy with anticipation and stark fear. A twinge of sympathy went through her, for she could only imagine his terror at being so completely helpless. "What is it?" he managed to whisper. Callahay had no answer. She moved to the room's one window and pulled aside the drape. Out on the street below her, she saw the fighting, where a trio of half-orc guards slashed and rushed wildly after the short hops and flights of a single gargoyle. Callahay watched for a while, mesmerized by the strange sequence and dance. Then she gave a shout and fell back as a gargoyle crashed through the window, scattering shards of glass, its clawed hands reaching for her throat. The woman let herself fall over in a backward roll, and she came up lightly to her feet, reversing her momentum and leaping forward as the foolish gargoyle charged ahead, impaling itself on her blade. But another was at the window, ready to take its place. "Help me!" Davis Aang cried out. Callahay ignored him, except to think that if the situation got too desperate, she might be able to use the man as an offering to the beasts while she made her escape out the door. She was a long way from that unpleasant possibility, however, and she went forward to meet the newest invader, working her sword with the skill of a seasoned veteran.
"Be reasonable, my friend," Canthan said as he backed away.
Artemis and Treri, his face perfectly expressionless, walked toward him.
"The girl is dead?"
No answer.
"Be reasonable, man," Canthan reiterated. "She was the source of power for this place. Her life force was feeding it."
No answer. Soon Canthan had a wall to his back, and Intreri was still coming on, sword and dagger in hand.
"Ah, but you fancied her, did you not?"
Canthan asked. He laughed. A sound he had to admit to himself was for no better reason than to cover his sincere discomfort. For Canthan didn't have many spells left to cast, and if Intreri had found a way to defeat Athrogate, he was a formidable foe indeed. Still no answer, and Canthan cast a quick spell that sent him, in an extra-dimensional blink, to the other side of the room. Intreri did nothing but turn and continue his determined approach.
"By the gods! Don't tell me that you slew Athrogate!"
Canthan said to him.
"Why, he was worth quite a bit to the Citadel. A favor I'd do for you in killing you now. However we might talk, I cannot forgive that, I fear, nor will Nelect."
He finished with a flourish of his arms and launched a lightning bolt in Treri's way. But it wasn't that easy, and Treri moved before the blast ensued, a sudden and efficient dive and roll out to the side. Canthan was already casting a second time, sending a series of magical missiles that no man, not even Artemis and Treri, could avoid. But the assassin growled through their stinging bites and came on. Laughing, Canthan readied another blast of lightning, but a dagger flashed through the air, striking him in the chest and interrupting his casting. The wizard was of course well warded from such mundane attacks, and even the jeweled dagger bounced away. He quickly refocused and let his blast fly at the man, or at what he thought was the man, he realized too late, for it was naught but a wall of ash. Growing increasingly fearful, Canthan spun around to survey the room. No Intreri. He spun again, then stopped and muttered,
"Oh, clever.
He didn't even have to look to understand the assassin's ruse and movement. For in that moment of distraction from the dagger, in that reflexive blink of the wizard's eye, Entreri had not only swiped the sword and put forth the ash wall, but he had leaped up, catching himself on Canthan's webbing. The wizard glanced up at him. The assassin was in a curl, legs tucked up tight against his chest, his hands plunged into the secure webbing. He uncoiled and swayed back, then toward Canthan. As he came forward, he flicked something he held in one hand, a simple flint and steel contraption. The resulting spark ignited the web and burned the entire section away in an instant, just as Entreri came to the height of his swing. He flew forward, falling over into a backward somersault as he went, extending his legs and arms to control the fall. He landed lightly and in perfect balance right in front of the wizard, and out came his sword. The skilled wizard struck first, a blast of stunning lightning that crackled all over Entreri's body, sparks flying from his sword. His jaw snapped uncontrollably, his muscles tensing and clenching, the fingers of one hand curling into a tight ball, the knuckles of the other whitening on the hilt of Karin's claw. But Entreri didn't fly back, and he didn't fall away. He growled and held his ground. He took the hit, and with incredible determination and simple toughness, he fought through it. When the lightning ended, Entreri came out of it in a sudden spin, Karin's claw flying wide. Given the sheer power of that blade, beyond the defenses of any wards and guards, Entreri could have quite easily killed the horrified wizard, could have taken the man's head from his shoulders. But Karin's claw came in short in a diagonal stroke, cutting the wizard from shoulder to opposite hip. Stunned and falling back, Canthan could not get far enough away as Entreri, his face still so cold and expressionless that Canthan wondered briefly if he was nothing more than an animated corpse, leaped high in a spin and came around with a circle kick that snapped Canthan's head back viciously. Entreri retrieved his prized dagger and wiped the blood from his nose and mouth as he again stalked over to the prone Canthan. Face down, the man squirmed, then stubbornly pulled himself up to his elbows. Entreri kicked him in the head and kicked him again before Canthan settled back down to the floor. The assassin put his sword away, but held the dagger as he grabbed the semi-conscious wizard by the scruff of his neck and dragged him back to the corridor. "Surely you'll be reasonable in this regard," Jarlaxle, on his hands and knees and peering over the edge of the hole, said to Athrogate. "You cannot get out without my help." Athrogate, hands on hips, just stared up at him. "I had to do something," Jarlaxle said. "Was I to allow you to kill my friend?"
"Bah! Well, I wouldn't have fought him if he hadn't have fought meself."
"True enough. But consider Olgercon."
"I did, and I killed him."
"Sometimes acts like that upset people."
"He shouldn't have got in me friend's way."
"So your friend could kill the girl?" Athrogate shrugged as if it did not matter.
"He had a reason."
"An errant reason."
"What's done is done. You wanting an apology?"
"I don't know that I want anything," Jarlaxle replied. "You seem to be the one in need, not I."
"Bah!"
"You cannot get out. Starvation is a lousy way for a warrior to die." Athrogate just shrugged, moved to the side of the hole, studied the sheer wall for a moment, and sat down. Jarlaxle sighed and turned away to consider Arrayan. She was still cradling Olgercon's head, whispering to him.
"Don't you dare leave me," she pleaded.
"And only now you realize your love for him?" Jarlaxle asked. Arrayan shot him a hateful look that told him his guess was on the mark. Noise from the corridor turned Jarlaxle's head, but not the woman's. In came Entreri, muttering under his breath and dragging Canthan at the end of one arm. He moved around the hole to Arrayan and Olgercon. The woman looked at him with a mixture of surprise, curiosity, and horror. Entreri had no time for it. He grabbed her by the shoulder and shoved her aside, then dropped Canthan before Olgercon. Arrayan came back at him, but he stopped her with the coldest and most frightening look the woman had ever seen. With her out of the way, Entreri turned his attention to Olgercon. He grabbed the large half-orc's hand and pulled it out over the groaning Canthan. He put his dagger into Ulger Khan's palm and forced the half-orc's fingers over it. He glanced at Array and then at Jarlaxle, and he drove the dagger down into Canthan's back. He slipped his thumb free, placed it on the bottom of the dagger's jeweled hilt, and willed the blade to feed. The vampiric weapon went to its task with relish, stealing the very soul of Canthan and feeding it back to its wielder. Ulger Khan's chest lifted, and his eyes opened as he coughed forth his first breath in many seconds. He continued to gasp for a moment. His eyes widened in horror as he came to understand the source of his healing. He tried to pull his hand away, but Entreri held him firmly in place, forcing him to feed until Canthan's life force was simply no more.
"What did you do?"
Arrayne cried, her voice caught between horror and joy. She came forward, and Entreri did not try to stop her. He extracted his dagger from Ulger Khan's grasp and moved aside. Arrayne fell over her half-orc friend, sobbing with joy and saying,
"It was always you,"
over and over again. Ulger Khan just shook his head, staring blankly at Entreri for a moment. He sat up, his strength and health renewed. Then he focused on Arrayne, upon her words, and he buried his face in her hair. "Ah, the kindness of your heart," Jarlaxle remarked to the assassin. "How unselfish of you. Since the contender for your prize was about to be no more."
"Maybe I just wanted Canthan dead."
"Then maybe you should have killed him in the other room."
"Shut up."
Jarlaxle laughed and sighed all at once.
"Where is Ellery?" Entreri asked.
"I believe that you nicked her heart." Entreri shook his head at the insanity of it all. "She was unreliable in any case," Jarlaxle said. "Obviously so. I do take offense when women I have bedded turn on me with such fury."
"If it happens often, then perhaps you should work on your technique."
That had Jarlaxle laughing, but just for a moment. "So we are five," he said. "Or perhaps four," he added, glancing at the hole.
"Stubborn dwarf?" asked the assassin.
"Is there any other kind?" Entreri moved to the edge of the hole.
"Ugly one," he called down. "Your wizard friend is dead." "Bah!"
Athrogate snorted. Entreri glanced back at Jarlaxle, then moved over, grabbed Canthan's corpse, and hauled him over the edge of the hole, dropping him with a splat beside the surprised dwarf.
"Your friend is dead,"
Entreri said again, and the dwarf didn't bother to argue the point.
"And so now, you've a choice." "Eat him or starve?"
Athrogate asked. "Eat him, and eventually starve anyway," Jarlaxle corrected, coming up beside Entreri to peer in at the dwarf. "Or, you could come out of the hole and help us."
"Help you what?"
"Win," said the drow.
"Didn't you just stop that possibility when Canthan put it forth?"
"No," Jarlaxle said with certainty. "Canthan was wrong. He believed that Arrayne was the continuing source of power for the castle, but that is not so. She was the beginning of the enchantment, 'tis true, but this place is far beyond her." The drow had all of the others listening by then, with Ulger Khan, the color returned to his face, standing solidly once more. "If I believed otherwise, then I would have killed Arrayne myself," Jarlaxle went on. "But no. This castle has a king, a great and powerful one."
"How do you know this?"
Entreri asked. And he seemed as doubtful and confused as the others, even Athrogate. "I saw enough of the book to recognize that it has a different design than the one Herminical used outside of Heliogabalus," the drow explained. "And there is something else." He put a hand over the extra-dimensional pocket button he wore, where he kept the skull-shaped gem he had taken from Herminical's book. I sense a strength here, a mighty power. It is clear to me, and given all that I know of Zheng Yi, and all that the Dragon Sisters told me, with their words, and with the fear that was so evident in their eyes, it is not hard for me to see the logic of it all.
"What are you talking about?" asked Intrary.
"Dragon Sisters,"
Athrogate added, but no one paid him any heed. "The king," said Jarlaxle. "I know he exists, and I know where he is."
"And do you know how to kill him?" Entreri asked.
It was a hopeful question, but one that was not answered with a hopeful response. The assassin let it go at that, surely realizing he'd never get a straight answer from Jarlaxle. He looked back down at Athrogate, who was standing then, looking up intently.
"Are you with us, or should we leave you to eat your friend and starve?"
Intrary asked. Athrogate looked down at Canthan, then back up at Intrary.
"Don't look like he tastes too good. And one thing I'm always wanting is food."
He pronounced "good" and "food" a bit off on both, so that they seemed closer to rhyming, and that brought a scowl to Intrary's face.
"He starts that again, and he's staying in the hole," he remarked to Jarlaxle,
and the drow, who was already taking off his belt that he might command it to elongate and extract the dwarf, laughed again.
"We'll have your word that you'll make no moves against any of us," Entreri said.
"You're to be taking me word?"
"No, but then I can kill you with a clearer conscience."
"Bwahaha!"
"I do so hate him,"
Entreri muttered to Jarlaxle, and he moved away. Jarlaxle considered that with a wry grin, thinking that perhaps it was yet another reason for him to get Athrogate out and by their side. The dwarf's lack of concern for Canthan was genuine, Jarlaxle knew, and Athrogate would not go against them unless he found it to be in his best interests. Which, of course, was the way with all of Jarlaxle's friends. Chapter 21 An Audience with the King. Athrogate and Intrary eyed each other for a long, long while after the dwarf came out of the hole.
"Could have ruined your weapon, you know,"
Athrogate remarked, holding up the morning star that coated itself with a rust-inducing liquid.
"Could have eaten your soul, you know,"
the assassin countered, mimicking the dwarf's tone and dialect.
"With both your weapons turned to dust? Got the juice of a rust monster in it,"
he said, jostling the morning star so that the head bounced a bit at the end of its chain.
"It may be that you overestimate your weapons or underestimate mine. In either case, you would not have enjoyed learning the truth."
Athrogate cracked a smile.
"Someday we'll find out that truth."
"Be careful what you wish for."
"Bwahaha!"
Treri wanted nothing more than to drive his dagger into the annoying dwarf's throat at that moment. But it wasn't the time. They remained surrounded by enemies in a castle very much alive and hostile. They needed the powerful dwarf fighting beside them. "I remain convinced that Canthan was wrong," Jarlaxle said, moving between the two. He glanced back at the two half-orcs, leading the gaze of the dwarf and the assassin. Arayan sat against the wall across the way, while her companion scrambled about on all fours, apparently searching for something. Ulger Khan looked much healthier, obviously so. The dagger had fed Canthan's life energy to him and had healed much of the damage of Athrogate's fierce attacks. Beyond that, the great weariness that had been dragging on Ulger Khan seemed lifted. His eyes were bright and alert, his movements crisp. But as much better as he looked, Arayan appeared that much worse. The woman's eyes drooped and her head swayed as if her neck had not the strength to hold it upright. Something about the last battles had taken much from her, it seemed, and the castle was taking the rest.
"The castle has a king," Jarlaxle said.
"Bah! Canthan got it right, and ye killed him to death for it," said Athrogate.
It's the girl, don't you see? She's wilting away right afore your eyes.
No doubt she is part of it, the drow replied, but only a small part. The real source of the castle's life lies below us.
And how might ye be knowing that? Asked the dwarf. And what's he looking for, anyway?
I know, because I can feel the castle's king as acutely as I can feel my own skin. And I know not what Olgercon is seeking, nor do I much care. Our destiny lies below, and quickly if we hope to save Arrayan.
What makes ye think I'm giving an orc snot rag for that one?
And Treri shot the dwarf a hateful look.
What?
Athrogate asked with mock innocence.
She ain't no friend of me own, and she's just a half-orc. Half too many by me own counting.
Then disregard her, Jarlaxle intervened. Think of yourself, and rightly so. I tell you that if we defeat the king of this castle, the castle will fight us no more, whatever Arrayan's fate. I also tell you that we should do all that we can to save her, to keep her alive now. For if she is taken by the castle, it will benefit the construct and hurt us. Trust me on this and follow my advice. If I am wrong, and the castle continues to feed from her, and in doing so it continues to attack us, then I will kill her myself.
The dwarf nodded.
Fair enough.
But I only say that because I am certain it will not come to that, Jarlaxle quickly added for the sake of Olgercon, who glared at him. Now let us tend our wounds and prepare our weapons, for we have a king to kill. Athrogate pulled a water skin off and moved toward the two half-orcs.
Here, he offered. Get a bit of the healing potions to get your strength back, he said to Arrayan. And as for yourself, sorry I braked your neck.
Olgercon offered nothing in reply. He hesitated for a moment by Arrayan's side, but then moved back toward the side passage and began crawling around on all fours once more, searching. And Treri pulled Jarlaxle to the far side of the room and asked,
What are you talking about? How do you know what you pretend to know? Or is it all but a ruse?
Not a ruse, Jarlaxle assured him. I feel it, and have since we entered this place. Logic tells me that Arrayan could not have constructed anything of this magnificence, and everything I have seen and felt since only confirms that logic.
You have told me that all before, the assassin replied. Could you offer something more?
Jarlaxle patted his button pocket, wherein he had stored the skull. The skull gem we took from the other tower has sensitized me to certain things. I feel the king below us. His is a life force quite mighty.
And we are to kill him?
Of course.
On your feeling?
And following the clues. Do you remember Herminical's book? And Treri thought on that for a moment, then nodded. Do you remember the designs etched upon its leathery cover, and in the margins on the page? Again the assassin paused and shook his head. Skulls, Jarlaxle explained. Human skulls.
And?
Did you notice the designs on the book up the ramp, the source of this castle? And Treri stared hard at his friend. He had not actually looked at the book that closely, but he was beginning to catch on. Given his experiences with Jarlaxle, where every road seemed to lead, his answer was as much statement as question.
Dragons?
Exactly. The drow confirmed, pleased that Entreri resisted the urge to punch him in the face. I understand the fearful expressions of our sister employers. They knew that the Witch King could pervert dragonkind as he perverted humankind, even from beyond the grave. They feared the apparent opening of Zhengyi's lost library, as evidenced by Herminical's tower. They feared that such a book as the one that constructed this castle might be uncovered.
You doubt that Arrayan started this process?
Not at all, as I explained. The book used her to send out its call, I believe. And that call was answered.
By a dragon?
More likely an undead dragon.
Wonderful.
Jarlaxle shrugged against his companion's disgusted stare.
It is our way. An adventurous road.
It is a fatal disease. Again the drow shrugged, and a wide grin spread across his face. They continued on their way down the side passage Canthan had taken to the room where Entreri had defeated the battle mage. The magical webbing Canthan had created to prevent the daemon eggs from falling remained in place, except for the small area Entreri had burned away in his fight with the mage. Still, the five went through the room quickly, not wanting an encounter with those powerful adversaries. They believed that the king, as Jarlaxle had aptly named it, awaited them. And they needed no more wounds and no more weariness. The order of the day at that time was avoiding battles, and so with that in mind, Entreri took up the point position. They made good progress for a short while along the twisting, winding corridor. No traps presented themselves, only the pressure bars that kept lighting the wall torches, and no monsters rose before them. Around one particularly sharp bend, though, they found Entreri waiting for them, his expression concerned.
A room with a dozen coffins like those of the gnome mummies, he explained, only even more decorated.
A dozen of the raggy ones, Athrogate replied. Ha! Six laps each, he said, and sent his morning stars into alternating swings.
The dwarf's cavalier attitude did little to lift the mood of the others, however. There is another exit from the room, or is this the end of our path? Jarlaxle asked.
Straight across, said Entreri. A door.
Jarlaxle instructed them to wait, then slowly moved ahead. He found the room around the next bend, a wide circular chamber, lined, as Entreri had said, with a dozen sarcophagi. The drow took out the skull gem and allowed it to guide his sensibilities. He felt the energy within each of the coffins, vengeful and focused, hating death and envying life. The drow fell deeper into the skull gem, testing its strength. The gem was attuned to humans, not the dog-faced humanoids wrapped in rags within the coffins. But they were not too far removed, and when he opened his eyes again, Jarlaxle drew forth a slender wand from its holster inside his cloak and aimed it across the room at the door. He paused a moment to consider the richly decorated portal, for even in the low light of the torches burning in the wall sconces behind him, he could see the general makeup of its design. A bas-relief of a great battle with scores of warriors swarming a rearing dragon. The drow found the design quite revealing.
It was made of memories, he whispered.
And he looked all around, for he was talking about more than that door. He was talking about the whole of the place. The castle was a living entity, created of magic and memories. Its energy brought forth the gargoyles and the doors, the stone walls and tunnels, complete with the clever designs of the wall torches and the traps. Its energy recreated its former occupiers, the gnoll soldiers Zheng Yi had used as staff, only trapped in undeath and far more powerful than they had been in life. And its energy had unwittingly tapped into the other memories of the place, animating in lesser form the many bodies that had been buried on that spot. Jarlaxle suspected then that those undead skeletons that had risen against them in the courtyard were not of Zheng Yi's design, but were an inadvertent side effect of the magical release. He smiled at that thought and looked ahead at the design on the door. It was no haphazard artist's interpretation. The scene was indeed a memory, a record of something that had truly occurred. The drow had hoped that the suspicions festering within him since crawling through the portcullis would prove accurate. And there was his confirmation, and his hope. He pointed his wand at the door and uttered a command word. Several locks clicked and a latch popped. With a rush of air, the door swung open. Beyond it, the corridor continued into darkness. Remain in a tight group and be quick through the room. Jarlaxle instructed the others when he returned to them a moment later. The door is open. Make sure it remains so as we pass. Come now and be quick. He glanced at the half-orcs, Olgercon all but carrying Arrayan, who seemed as if she couldn't even keep her head from swaying. Jarlaxle motioned for Atherogate to help them, and though he gave a disgusted sigh, the dwarf complied. "Are you coming?" the drow asked Entreri as the others started away. The assassin held up his hand, looked back the way they had come, and said, "We're being followed." "Press ahead," Jarlaxle instructed. "Our road is ahead of us, not behind." Entreri turned on him. "You know something." "You hope I do," Jarlaxle replied, and he started after the trio. He paused a few steps down and glanced back at his friend and grinned sheepishly. "As do I." Entreri's expression showed that the humor was not appreciated. "We cannot go out unless we are willing to let the castle win," Jarlaxle reminded him after they had taken a few steps. "And in that victory, the construct will claim Arrayan. Is that acceptable to you?" "Am I following you?" Entreri remarked. They passed through the chamber quickly, and no sarcophagi opened and no eggs fell, releasing daemons to rise against them. Through the other door, they found a long descending staircase, and down they went into the darkness. Entreri took the lead again, inspecting every step and every handhold as the light diminished around them. Near to the bottom, he was relieved to see another of the pressure plates, and torches soon flared to life on the opposite walls at the sides of the bottom step. The light flickered and cast long, uneven shadows across stone that was no longer worked and fitted. It seemed as if they had come to the end of the construct, to a natural winding tunnel boring down ever deeper before them. Entreri went ahead a short distance, the others moving close behind. He turned and went back past them to the last two torches. He inspected them carefully, expecting a trap or ten, and indeed, on the left-hand one, he removed several barbed pins, all wet with some sort of poison. Then he carefully extracted the torches and carried them back to the others. He handed one to Olgercon and had thought to give the other to Arrayan. One look at the woman dissuaded him from that course, however, for she didn't seem to have the strength to hold it, and indeed, had it not been for Olgercon's supporting arm, she would not have been standing. He offered the torch to Atherogate instead.
"I got dwarf eyes, ye dolt," Atherogate growled at him. "I ain't needing no firelight. This tunnel's bathed in sunlight next to where me kin have dug."
"Jarlaxle needs both of his hands, and Arrayan is too weak," Entreri said to him, thrusting the torch back his way. "I prefer to lead in the darkness."
"Bah! But you're just making me a target," the dwarf growled back, but he took the torch.
"Another benefit," Entreri said, turning away and moving out in front. The corridor continued to bend to the left even more sharply, giving the assassin the feeling that they were in the same general area from which they'd started, only far below. The caverns were all of natural stone, with no more torches and no pressure plates or other traps that the assassin could locate. There were intersections, however, and always sharp turns back the other way as the other winding tunnels joined into this one, becoming one great spiraling corridor. With each joining, the passage widened and heightened, so that it seemed almost as if they were walking down a long, sloping cavern instead of a corridor. Trying to minimize the feeling of vulnerability, Entreri kept them near to the inner bending wall as he edged ahead, sword in one hand, dagger in the other. Their progress was steady for some time, and they put many hundreds of feet between themselves and the staircase. But then Olgercon's cry froze the assassin in mid-stride.
"It's taking her!"
the half-orc wailed. Entreri spun and ran back past the turning Atherogate. He shoved by Jarlaxle, needing to get to Arrayan. By the time he spotted her, she was down on the ground, Olgercon kneeling over her and whispering to her. Entreri slid down beside her, opposite the large half-orc. He started to call out to her, but cut himself short when he realized that he was calling the name of a halfling friend he had left far back in the distant southern city of Kalimport. Surprised and unnerved, the assassin looked from Arrayan to Jarlaxle, his expression demanding answers. Jarlaxle wasn't looking back at him, though. The drow stood facing Arrayan with his eyes closed and his hand over the center of his waistcoat. He was whispering something that Entreri could not make out, and in looking from him back to the fallen woman, Entreri understood that the drow was trying to somehow intervene. Entreri thought of the skull gem and guessed